For a moment the eyes of Denethor glowed again as he faced Gandalf, and Pippin felt once more the strain between their wills. But now almost it seemed as if their glances were like blades from eye to eye, flickering as they fenced. Pippin trembled, fearing some dreadful stroke. But suddenly Denethor relaxed and grew cold again. He shrugged his shoulders.
"If I had, if you had," he said, "such words and ifs are vain. It has gone into the shadow, and only time will show what doom awaits it and us. The time will not be long. In what is left, let all who fight the enemy in their fashion be at one, and keep hope while they may, and after hope still the hardihood to die free." He turned to Faramir. "What think you of the garrison at Osgiliath?"
"It is not strong," said Faramir. "I have sent the company of Ithilien to strengthen it, as I have said."
"Not enough, I deem," said Denethor. "It is there that the first blow will fall. They will have need of some stout captain there."
"There and elsewhere in many places," said Faramir, and sighed.
"Alas for my brother, whom I too loved," he rose. "May I have your leave, father?"
And then he swayed and leaned upon his father's chair.
"You are weary, I see," said Denethor. "You have ridden fast and far, and under shadows of evil in the air, I am told."
"Let us not speak of that," said Faramir.
"Then we will not," said Denethor. "Go now and rest as you may. Tomorrow's need will be sterner."
All now took leave of the lord of the city, and went to rest while they still could. Outside there was a starless blackness as Gandalf, with Pippin beside him bearing a small torch, made his way to their lodging. They did not speak until they were behind closed doors. Then at last Pippin took Gandalf's hand.
"Tell me," he said, "is there any hope? For Frodo, I mean, or at least mostly for Frodo."
Gandalf put his hand on Pippin's head.
"There never was much hope," he answered. "Just a fool's hope, as I've been told. And when I heard of Kirith Ungol—"
He broke off and strode to the window, as if his eyes could pierce the night in the east.
"Kirith Ungol," he muttered. "Why that way, I wonder?"
He turned.
"Just now, Pippin, my heart almost failed me, hearing that name. And yet in truth I believe that the news that Faramir brings has some hope in it. For it seems clear that our enemy has opened his war at last, and made the first move while Frodo was still free. So now, for many days, he will have his eye turned this way and that, away from his own land. And yet, Pippin, I feel from afar his haste and fear. He has begun sooner than he would. Something has happened to stir him."
Gandalf stood for a moment and thought.
"Maybe," he muttered. "Maybe even your foolishness helped, my lad. Let me see. Some 5 days ago now, he would discover that we had thrown down Saruman, and had taken the stone. Still, what of that? We could not use it to much purpose, or without his knowing. Ah, I wonder. Aragorn! His time draws near, and he is strong and stern underneath, Pippin. Bold, determined, able to take his own counsel, and dare great risks at need. That may be it. He may have used the stone, and shown himself to the enemy, challenging him for this very purpose. I wonder. Well, we shall not know the answer till the riders of Rohan come, if they do not come too late. There are evil days ahead. To sleep while we may."
"But," said Pippin.
"But what?" said Gandalf. "Only one but will I allow to-night."
"Gollum," said Pippin. "How on earth could they be going about with him, even following him? And I could see that Faramir didn't like the place he was taking them to any more than you do. What's wrong?"
"I cannot answer that now," said Gandalf. "Yet my heart guessed that Frodo and Gollum would meet before the end, for good or for evil. But of Kirith Ungol I will not speak to-night. Treachery, treachery, I fear, treachery of that miserable creature. But so it must be. Let us remember that a traitor may betray himself and do good that he does not intend. It can be so sometimes. Good night.
The next day came with a morning like a brown dusk, and the hearts of men, lifted for a while by the return of Faramir, sank low again. The winged shadows were not seen again that day, yet ever and anon, high above the city, a faint cry would come, and many who heard it would stand stricken with a passing dread, while the less stout-hearted quailed and wept. And now Faramir was gone again. "They give him no rest," some murmured. "The Lord drives his son too hard, and now he must do the duty of two, for himself and for the one that will not return." And ever men looked northward, asking, "Where are the riders of Rohan?" In truth, Faramir did not go by his own choosing. But the Lord of the City was master of his counsel, and he was in no mood that day to bow to others. Early in the morning the council had been summoned. There all the captains judged that because of the threat in the south, their force was too weak to make any stroke of war on their own part, unless perchance the riders of Rohan yet should come. Meanwhile, they must man the walls and wait.
"Yet," said Denethor, "we should not lightly abandon the outer defences. The ram is made with so great a labour, and the enemy must pay dearly for the crossing of the river."
"That he cannot do, in force to assail the city, either north of Caer Andros because of the marshes, or southwards towards Lebenin because of the breadth of the river that needs many boats. It is at Osgiliath that he will put forth his weight, as before when Boromir denied him the passage."
"That was but a trial," said Faramir.
"Today we may make the enemy pay 10 times our loss at the passage, and yet rue the exchange, for he can afford to lose a host better than we to lose a company, and the retreat of those that we put out far afield will be perilous if he wins across in force."
"And what of Caer Andros?" said the prince. "That, too, must be held, if Osgiliath is defended. Let us not forget the danger on our left. The Rohirrim may come, and they may not. But Faramir has told us of great strength drawing ever to the Black Gate. More than one host may issue from it, and strike for more than one passage."
"Much must be risked in war," said Denethor. "Caer Andros is manned, and no more can be sent so far. But I will not yield the river and the Pelennor unfought, not if there is a captain here who has still the courage to do his lord's will."
Then all were silent, but at length Faramir said,
"I do not oppose your will, sire.
Since you are robbed of Boromir, I will go and do what I can in his stead, if you command it." "I do so," said Denethor.
"Then farewell," said Faramir.
"But if I should return, think better of me." "That depends on the manner of your return," said Denethor.
Gandalf it was that last spoke to Faramir ere he rode east.
"Do not throw your life away rashly or in bitterness," he said. "You will be needed here, for other things than war. Your father loves you, Faramir, and will remember it ere the end. Farewell."
So now the Lord Faramir had gone forth again, and had taken with him such strength of men as were willing to go or could be spared. On the wall some gazed through the gloom towards the ruined city, and they wondered what chanced there, for nothing could be seen, and others, as ever, looked north and counted the leagues to Theoden in Rohan. "Will he come? Will he remember our old alliance?" they said.
"Yes, he will come," said Gandalf. "Even if he comes too late. But think, at best the Red Arrow cannot have reached him more than 2 days ago, and the miles are long from Edoras."
It was night again ere news came. A man rode in haste from the fords, saying that a host had issued from Minas Morgul and was already drawing nigh to Osgiliath, and it had been joined by regiments from the south, Haradrim, cruel and tall. "And we have learned," said the messenger, "that the black captain leads them once again, and the fear of him has passed before him over the river." With those ill-boding words, the third day closed since Pippin came to Minas Tirith. Few went to rest, for small hope had any now that even Faramir could hold the fords for long. The next day, though the darkness had reached its full and grew no deeper, it weighed heavier on men's hearts, and a great dread was on them. Ill news came soon again. The passage of Andwin was won by the enemy. Faramir was retreating to the wall of the Pelennor, rallying his men to the causeway forts, but he was 10 times outnumbered. "If he wins back at all across the Pelennor, his enemies will be on his heels," said the messenger. "They've paid dear for the crossing, but less dearly than we hoped. The plan has been well laid. It is now seen that in secret they have long been building floats and barges in great numbers in East Dothgiliath. They swarmed across like beetles. But it is the black captain that defeats us. Few will stand and abide even the rumour of his coming. His own folk quail at him, and they would slay themselves at his bidding."
"Then I am needed there more than here," said Gandalf, and rode off at once, and the glimmer of him faded soon from sight. And all that night Pippin alone and sleepless stood upon the wall and gazed eastward. The bells of day had scarcely rung out again, a mockery in the unlightened dark, when far away he saw fires spring up, across in the dim spaces where the walls of the Pelennor stood. The watchmen cried aloud, and all men in the city stood to arms. Now ever and anon there was a red flash, and slowly through the heavy air dull rumbles could be heard. "They have taken the wall," men cried. "They are blasting breaches in it. They are coming." "Where is Faramir?" cried Beregond in dismay. "Say not that he has fallen." It was Gandalf that brought the first tidings. With a handful of horsemen he came in the middle morning, riding as escort to a line of wains. They were filled with wounded men, all that could be saved from the wreck of the causeway forts. At once he went to Denethor. The lord of the city now sat in a high chamber above the hall of the White Tower, with Pippin at his side, and through the dim windows, north and south and east, he bent his dark eyes, as if to pierce the shadows of doom that ringed him round. Most to the north he looked, and would pause at whiles to listen, as if by some ancient art his ears might hear the thunder of hoofs on the plains far away. "Is Faramir come?" he asked.
"No," said Gandalf. "But he still lived when I left him. Yet he is resolved to stay with the rearguard, lest the retreat over the Pelennor become a rout. He may, perhaps, hold his men together long enough, but I doubt it. He is pitted against a foe too great. For one has come that I feared."
"Not the Dark Lord!" cried Pippin, forgetting his place in his terror. Denethor laughed bitterly.
"Nay, not yet, Master Peregrine. He will not come save only to triumph over me when all is won. He uses others as his weapons. So do all great lords, if they are wise, Master Halfling. Or why should I sit here in my tower and think and watch and wait, spending even my sons, for I can still wield a brand?"
He stood up and cast open his long black cloak, and behold, he was clad in mail beneath, and girt with a long sword, great hilted in a sheath of black and silver.
"Thus have I walked, and thus now for many years have I slept," he said, "lest with age the body should grow soft and timid. Yet now, under the lord of Barad-dûr, the most fell of all his captains is already master of your outer walls," said Gandalf. "King of Angmar, long ago, sorcerer, ringwraith, lord of the Nazgûl, a spear of terror in the hand of Sauron, shadow of despair."
"Then, Mithrandir, you had a foe to match you," said Denethor. "For myself, I've long known who is the chief captain of the hosts of the Dark Tower. Is this all that you have returned to say? Or can it be that you have withdrawn because you are overmatched?"
Pippin trembled, fearing that Gandalf would be stung to sudden wrath, but his fear was needless. "It might be so," Gandalf answered softly. "But our trial of strength is not yet come, and if words spoken of old be true, not by the hand of man shall he fall, and hidden from the wise is the doom that awaits him. However that may be, the captain of despair does not press forward yet. He rules rather according to the wisdom that you have just spoken, from the rear, driving his slaves in madness on before. Nay, I came rather to guard the hurt men that can yet be healed, for the Ramas is breached far and wide, and soon the host of Morgul will enter in at many points, and I came chiefly to say this. Soon there will be battle on the fields, a sortie must be made ready. Let it be of mounted men. In them lies our brief hope, for in one thing only is the enemy still poorly provided. He has few horsemen."
"And we also have few. Now would the coming of Rohan be in the nick of time," said Denethor.
"We are likely to see other newcomers first," said Gandalf. "Fugitives from Caer Andros have already reached us. The isle has fallen. Another army has come from the Black Gate, crossing from the northeast."
"Some have accused you, Mithrandir, of delighting to bear ill news," said Denethor. "But to me this is no longer news. It was known to me ere nightfall yesterday. As for the sortie, I had already given thought to it. Let us go down."
Time passed. At length watchers on the walls could see the retreat of the out-companies. Small bands of weary and often wounded men came first with little order. Some were running wildly as if pursued. Away to the eastward the distant fires flickered, and now it seemed that here and there they crept across the plain. Houses and barns were burning. Then from many points little rivers of red flame came hurrying on, winding through the gloom, converging towards the line of the broad road that led from the city gate to Osgiliath. "The enemy," men murmured. "The dyke is down. Here they come, pouring through the breaches, and they carry torches, it seems. Where are our own folk?" It drew now to evening by the hour, and the light was so dim that even far-sighted men upon the citadel could discern little clearly out upon the fields, save only the burnings that ever multiplied, and the lines of fire that grew in length and speed. At last, less than a mile from the city, a more ordered mass of men came into view, marching, not running, still holding together. The watchers held their breath. "Faramir must be there," they said. "He can govern man and beast. He will make it yet." Now the main retreat was scarcely 2 furlongs distant. Out of the gloom behind, a small company of horsemen galloped, all that was left of the rear guard. Once again they turned at bay, facing the oncoming lines of fire. Then suddenly there was a tumult of fierce cries. Horsemen of the enemy swept up. The lines of fire became flowing torrents, file upon file of orcs bearing flames, and wild Southron men with red banners, shouting with harsh tongues, surging up, overtaking the retreat. And with a piercing cry, out of the dim sky fell the winged shadows, the Nazgul stooping to the kill. The retreat became a rout. Already men were breaking away, flying wild and witless here and there, flinging away their weapons, crying out in fear, falling to the ground. And then a trumpet rang from the citadel, and Denethor at last released the sortie. Drawn up within the shadow of the gate and under the looming walls outside, they had waited for his signal. All the mounted men that were left in the city, now they sprang forward, formed, quickened to a gallop, and charged with a great shout. And from the walls an answering shout went up, for foremost on the field rode the Swan Knights of Dol Amroth, with their prince and his blue banner at their head. "Amroth for Gondor," they cried. "Amroth to Faramir." Like thunder they broke upon the enemy on either flank of the retreat. But one rider outran them all, swift as the wind in the grass. Shadowfax bore him, shining, unveiled once more, a light starting from his upraised hand. The Nazgul screeched and swept away, for their captain was not yet come to challenge the white fire of his foe.
the hosts of Morgul, intent on their prey, taken at unawares in wild career, broke, scattering like sparks in a gale. The out-companies, with a great cheer, turned and smote their pursuers. Hunters became the hunted. The retreat became an onslaught. The field was strewn with stricken orcs and men, and a reek arose of torches cast away, sputtering out in swirling smoke. The cavalry rode on. But Denethor did not permit them to go far. Though the enemy was checked, and for the moment driven back, great forces were flowing in from the east. Again the trumpet rang, sounding the retreat. The cavalry of Gondor halted. Behind their screen, the out-companies reformed. Now steadily they came marching back. They reached the gate of the city and entered, stepping proudly. And proudly the people of the city looked on them, and cried their praise, and yet they were troubled in heart, for the companies were grievously reduced. Faramir had lost a third of his men, and where was he? Last of all he came. His men passed in. The mounted knights returned, and at their rear the banner of Dol Amroth and the prince. And in his arms before him on his horse he bore the body of his kinsman, Faramir, son of Denethor, found upon the stricken field. "Faramir! Faramir!" men cried, weeping in the streets. But he did not answer, and they bore him away up the winding road to the citadel and his father. Even as the Nazgul had swerved aside from the onset of the White Rider, there came flying a deadly dart, and Faramir, as he held at bay a mounted champion of Harad, had fallen to the earth. Only the charge of Dol Amroth had saved him from the red Southland swords that would have hewed him as he lay. The Prince Imrahil brought Faramir to the White Tower, and he said, "Your son has returned, Lord, after great deeds," and he told all that he had seen. But Denethor rose and looked on the face of his son and was silent. Then he bade them make a bed in the chamber and lay Faramir upon it and depart. But he himself went up alone into the secret room under the summit of the tower, and many who looked up thither at that time saw a pale light that gleamed and flickered from the narrow windows for a while, and then flashed and went out. And when Denethor descended again, he went to Faramir and sat beside him without speaking, but the face of the Lord was grey, more death-like than his son's. So now at last the city was besieged, enclosed in a ring of foes. The Ramas was broken, and all the Pelennor abandoned to the enemy. The last word to come from outside the walls was brought by men flying down the northward road ere the gate was shut. They were the remnant of the guard that was kept at that point where the way from Anorion and Rohan ran into the townlands. Ingold led them, the same who had admitted Gandalf and Pippin less than 5 days before, while the sun still rose and there was hope in the morning. "There is no news of the Rohirrim," he said. "Rohan will not come now, or if they come, it will not avail us. The new host that we had tidings of has come first, from over the river by way of Andros, it is said. They're strong, battalions of orcs of the eye, and countless companies of men of a new sort that we have not met before. Not tall, but broad and grim, bearded like dwarves, wielding great axes. Out of some savage land in the wide east they come, we deem. They hold the northward road, and many have passed on into Anorion. The Rohirrim cannot come." The gate was shut. All night watchmen on the walls heard the rumour of the enemy that roamed outside, burning field and tree, and hewing any man that they found abroad, living or dead. The numbers that had already passed over the river could not be guessed in the darkness, but when morning, or its dim shadow, stole over the plain, it was seen that even fear by night had scarcely overcounted them. The plain was dark with their marching companies, and as far as eyes could strain in the murk there sprouted, like a foul fungus growth, all about the beleaguered city great camps of tents, black or sombre red. Busy as ants, hurrying orcs were digging lines of deep trenches in a huge ring, just out of bowshot from the walls, and as the trenches were made each was filled with fire.
though how it was kindled or fed, by art or devilry, none could see. All day the labour went forward, while the men of Minas Tirith looked on, unable to hinder it. And as each length of trench was completed, they could see great wains approaching, and soon yet more companies of the enemy were swiftly setting up, each behind the cover of a trench, great engines for the casting of missiles. There were none upon the city walls large enough to reach so far or to stay the work. At first men laughed and did not greatly fear such devices, for the main wall of the city was of great height and marvellous thickness, built ere the power and craft of Numenor waned in exile, and its outward face was like to the tower of Orthonk, hard and dark and smooth, unconquerable by steel or fire, unbreakable except by some convulsion that would rend the very earth on which it stood.
"Nay," they said, "not if the Nameless One himself should come. Not even he could enter here while we yet live." But some answered, "While we yet live? How long? He has a weapon that has brought low many strong places since the world began. Hunger. The roads are cut. Rohan will not come." But the engines did not waste shot upon the indomitable wall. It was no brigand or orc chieftain that ordered the assault upon the Lord of Mordor's greatest foe. A power and mind of malice guided it. As soon as the great catapults were set, with many yells and the creaking of rope and winch, they began to throw missiles marvellously high, so that they passed right above the battlement and fell thudding within the first circle of the city, and many of them, by some secret art, burst into flame as they came toppling down. Soon there was great peril of fire behind the wall, and all who could be spared were busy quelling the flames that sprang up in many places. Then among the greater castes there fell another hail, less ruinous but more horrible. All about the streets and lanes behind the gate it tumbled down, small round shot that did not burn. But when men ran to learn what it might be, they cried aloud or wept, for the enemy was flinging into the city all the heads of those who had fallen fighting at Osgiliath, or on the Ramas, or in the field. They were grim to look on, for though some were crushed and shapeless, and some had been cruelly hewn, yet many had features that could be told, and it seemed that they had died in pain, and all were branded with a foul token of the lidless eye. But marred and dishonoured as they were, it often chanced that thus a man would see again the face of someone that he had known, who had walked proudly once in arms, or tilled the fields, or ridden in upon a holiday from the green vales in the hills.